and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind. Coming up, it is 1 p.m.
Ben Starr, Kevin O'Donohue, and Nassima Diane Deemer here with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Thanks for being back with us, everybody. Kevin, good to be back.
Hey, Ben, good to be here.
We were on a slight hiatus last week as we had some encore shows.
Yes.
And I hope you enjoyed them.
They were great shows. The Body Dysmorphia show.
Well, that's why we chose them.
You know? Yeah. And also the Brenda Shoshana show, which is always, always, always relevant, right? Because we're feeling beings and learning how to manage your feelings by letting them go when you need to is always, always relevant. So we were glad to run those through. And just an announcement, we are having Harville Hendrix on the show coming up for 2 days. April 17th and 18th, Harville Hendrix, who's been on Oprah multiple times, he is the relationship expert in the country, if not the world. His work is known throughout the world, and we are proud to have him on WBAI on April 17th and 18th.
So excited for that. It's going to be amazing.
It's fantastic. We're so honored that he's coming. Carol Kramer will be here, and if you want to look him up, you can look up Harville Hendrix, H-E-N-D-R-I-X. And, you know, we discovered a really valuable thing, valuable tool reviewing his work, was that our partner's way of frustrating us.
Yes.
Does your partner frustrate you in any way?
Sometimes.
Are you living with more frustration than joy in your life? You can check it out. And because underneath every frustration is a real desire. Is a desire. You know, I'd like it to be otherwise. And often in relationships, we go into relationships, we bring desires from childhood. We bring desires from way back that never got met. Yeah. And so the promise of a relationship is that you get to get those.
Yeah.
You didn't get them when you were a kid, when you were young, but you get to get them with a mature adult partner who is willing to work with you.
Yeah, but then you end up in the relationship and you're like, but wait, he doesn't know how to do it either.
Yes.
Or she doesn't know how to do it either. And that's the frustration. Right. Like, oh my gosh.
Yes, Nassima, it's true. Yeah, your partner is just as inept in relating as you are. And we're all inept in relating. You know, human species, human beings relating to each other. You know, we're the only species that makes love face to face.
No.
The bonobos.
Right. And the otters, sea otters.
Otters?
Yeah.
Oh.
And
no wonder they always
have
a smile on their face.
Yeah.
But something tells me that other species are not making love, Kevin.
They're just procreating.
Yeah. Well, listen, if you tune into us on the April 17th and 18th, though couples that tune in those days will be making love that night because they'll learn these skills. You know, that are transformative in relationships. So we're so privileged and honored to have Harville Hendrix and Helen Huntley, his wife, who have devised these wonderful Imago relationship therapy program.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're looking forward to that.
Yes, we are.
We're also having on next week, we're having Paige Bellenbaum of the Motherhood Center on Tuesday.
Yes.
But we're taking it from a different angle. We're going to be having men in the studio.
Mm.
Imagine being married to a wife who is going through postpartum depression.
Yeah.
You know, men suffer postpartum depression too.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
So the male psychologist from the Motherhood Center will be here, and hopefully two fathers, at least we only have four mics, so two fathers and a male psychologist from the Motherhood Center to talk to us about postpartum depression for men.
Yes.
You know, 1 in 5 women who has a child suffers postpartum. It might be 1 in 3, Paige was saying. So wow. You'll notice we'll see more of that research as the years go on.
That's right.
But today, we are back. And because we missed last week, I wanted to come back with like a really seminal topic, really important topic. We want to use today's and tomorrow's shows as a sort of education day.
Mm-hmm.
Days, because what is it we're working from? You know, what does the positive mind mean?
Yeah.
Where does that term come from? How do you get a positive mind? You know, what are the elements of a positive mind? Is it something we can all achieve? Mm-hmm. Is it real? Can you have a positive mind? So I thought, you know, I should tell people about a field of psychology called positive psychology. You know, which is the root of our operating principles here.
Mm-hmm. Right. If you've been listening to The Positive Mind, you know, over the last weeks, months, years, decades.
Yes.
You have heard much about and around positive psychology.
Absolutely. And why it's difficult to have a positive psychology. I mean, we don't want to be Pollyanna-ish. You know, if you go to the doctor and you're diagnosed with having a severe illness, you know, you don't expect to be, oh, just cheer up, you know, don't, you know, you just get over it, just accept it, just do this. Right. The human mind does not work that way.
No, but they think it should.
Many people do.
And that's been a huge problem, I think, for people, thinking that, oh, I should be able to just change my mind.
Yeah.
I should be able to just get over this.
Yes, yes. And Ben was asking before the show, you want to tell your story, Ben, about your friend?
Yeah, I lost someone close to me, and well, we were talking about positive psychology as far as how practical is it, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to say to somebody who has suffered through a very deep trauma, whether it's a death of someone very close to them or some kind of abuse, or maybe, you know, they've lost their job and their livelihood, these are profound traumas, and it may be difficult for them to hear something like, hey, you know, you just got to be positive, go for a walk, right?
Right.
It's not always, I think, so easy.
No.
And my experience with mourning was that it took me almost a year to really mourn this one loss.
Yeah.
Now, you know, other people who were close to this individual took them even longer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think everyone's on their own timetable. Everyone's in a very individualized place when it comes to, you know, trauma and loss and grief.
Yeah. Was it a physical thing for you? This is a question I ask people who are going through grief, because I've had my own, and I'm wondering, like, was it physical? Like, did you know when it lifted?
I'd say, yeah. I mean, the early stages were physical. I felt physically ill, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, yeah, see, grief is often like a nagging.
Yeah.
A nagging in the mind, you know, that you can't shake. And it, you know, it takes time, and everybody has their own amount of time to go through it. Of course, there are things that help with the nagging, but it's a heaviness. You know, grief is a real heaviness. And you were telling about your grandma, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I have a grandmother. My grandfather on that side of the family passed away before I was even born.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are decades later, and I think that she still, in many ways, has not fully mourned that loss. I think she's still feeling that pain and depression around that loss.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? You know, which makes you wonder, like, when did she meet him? Was it her first and only love? I mean, built her world around this.
Yeah.
And so the loss of it could be even more tragic and traumatic.
Yeah. You know? Your whole world can just totally crumble. And if you have the resources or the guidance of somebody sort of helping you build yourself back up again, you could sort of stay there. If you don't know how to sort of, you know, position or just start to think about, you know, and I think that's what you were talking about, like how you work in a positive psychology way with hard things.
Yeah, you know, I often like to think, coming on the air and with people in general, that imagine the worst, imagine clinical depression, imagine being depressed, and what would I as a therapist say to a person? You don't say to somebody like that, just cheer up, you know, even after like you're working together for 2-3 years and, you know, that's still a persistent grief, a persistent depression. There never is an appropriate time to say, get over it, just get over it. I always try and approach this show with thinking, you know, there are some real depressed people out there listening, and I don't want to just suggest like bromides, like really simple solutions to these things.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is work to do. There's work to do. It's called therapy for a reason. It's work. And so as we, you know, what positive psychology, where positive psychology comes from, is that, yes, we pay attention to the disabling conditions, for instance, grief, that are contributing to a sufferer's pain, but we're also trying to create conditions for that person.
Right.
So subtly in the therapy, subtly where, you know, I'm suggesting or talking about or asking about, how was your weekend? How was your weekend different than last weekend? You know, what can you do to make some, get some moment of pleasure in your next weekend, so that we're not just processing family of origin material, which is critical and important, but we're also processing the future.
Yeah.
We're also processing something better for them. So I think as a therapist, I've often had, and I know Armand DeMille had this, you have to hold the promise of the person's future in your vision as a therapist. When you're working with somebody, you cannot simply just witness the depressed client and just be with them in their depression.
Meaning maybe they can't even conceive of a healthy, productive, functional future. So you, in a way, have to hold that space for them.
Yes.
And conceive of it for them and share that possibility with them.
Yeah.
It's almost like you don't want to believe the story of the depression, because the depression will tell the story, this is never going to end.
Yeah.
And as a therapist or anybody working with someone who's depressed, it's important to hold that, you know, it can end. And I'm holding that potential for you.
I've seen it end. It will end.
I've seen it end.
I know it will end. I know the type that you're in right now.
Yeah.
And I had somebody like that 6 months ago, and they're out of it.
Yeah.
So, but the person who's in it, they don't know it. Their whole body is in it. Their whole mind, it's almost like this black cloak over their whole mind and their body. So they don't have the promise of the future in their mind. You as the therapist are holding, and I do it all the time. I mean, Gestalt therapy, there's an old thing, Gestalt meaning wholeness, right? A Gestalt is a whole experience. Often children get interrupted in their development, so they're not wholly developed. That's why, you know, they end up with marital issues, problems in life, traumas that they can't get through and can't get over.
Attachment problems.
So we as Gestalt therapists, we try to help them resolve and finish their experience to create a kind of wholeness. So there's this exercise in Gestalt therapy where you see this picture of a woman, this old lady. Have you seen this?
Yes.
There's an old lady. Ben, have you seen this?
If you look at it one way, it's an old lady, but I feel like in another way, it's a beautiful young woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. That's Gestalt.
Yeah.
Right? So when I see a client come to me, I'm looking at two people, maybe more. You know, I'm looking at the depressed, symptomatic person, and I'm also looking for the gorgeous, beautiful, elegant woman.
Yeah.
You know, and so what positive psychology does is it says, okay, we see the old woman before us. We see, you know, figuratively, metaphorically.
The old belief or the old issue.
Right. The narrative, the old story, whatever, which is valid and real and you know, important, very, very important.
And has been important.
Yeah. And then also to look at the beautiful, elegant woman waiting to dominate the picture.
Yeah.
Because in this Gestalt picture, it's the old lady. And you can all look this up online under Gestalt images. And the old lady is the dominant image. So the trick is, how do I make my elegance, the good, beautiful part of me, be the bigger part of my picture?
Right.
And when you're symptomatic, when you're struggling, when you're suffering, it's not, you know, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah. And I can imagine even just taking in that image, you might even experience in yourself looking at the old woman and then seeing the young woman, and that might be even a state shift within yourself. It might actually, you know, in seeing the beauty, not that age isn't beautiful, but the way this picture is, it might show like a shift from a negative to a positive. And like, can you even bring that in mentally?
I think that's a good question. I think that's an important question. At times, somebody
shift.
Just will not believe that I have that in me. You know, I think that's a good point. I think there, as you slowly work through a sufferer's story, that they do get a moment where they do see a light. They do see this other image. They are willing to believe that there's more inside of me.
Yes.
And so I think you're right. I think it's a good therapeutic tool to input positive images at certain stages. But in the beginning, obviously, no, I'm just this old woman. You know, I'm just that picture that you see.
Yeah.
If you Google Gestalt images, G-E-S-T-A-L-T images, and you click on images.
Yes.
There's a lot of fascinating examples of this.
Yeah.
I see the one that you mentioned with the older woman and the younger woman.
Right.
There are a few others, and a lot of them are centered around faces, many of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And here's one with two people looking at each other, and they're all high contrast as well.
Mm. Yes.
Something that
like a vase. Is there the vase?
Right. Right. Yeah, it's a vase or candle holder, candlestick.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
But if you look at it another way, it's two faces looking at each other. Or there's one where it's a very high contrast face of a woman, but if you look at it another way, it's like a cartoonish-looking guy playing a saxophone.
Yeah,
it's so that's different, right. You know.
And it's like just like how you perceive a little subtle shift in your perception
that's
changes
right.
what you're seeing so dramatically.
And that's the
play of the mind and this shifting from negative to positive. And that's why also I think those are so high contrast, because it's a negative space and a light space. And how are you interpreting those things?
And if you're very, very depressed, you often can only see the one image.
Yeah.
We're all capable, 5-year-olds are capable at the right moment to see both.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, you can't do it. It's not like if you just have a disability. Everybody can do this. It's just that it's a good diagnostic tool to see, like, if a person can't week after week after week see the two figures.
Yeah.
Then, you know, obviously they're in some kind of deep depression. So,
right.
So we wanted to give you background here, background about positive psychology, because no, it's not Pollyanna. It is built on, we don't focus on the pathology, period. You know, my predecessor here on the show, Armand DeMille, I mean, he was brilliant at listening to people on the air. Knew their pathology and asked them about their lives.
Yes.
He did that for a reason.
To great effect.
He did that for a reason. He did that so that he could create an experience for people that they didn't know that they had or needed, so that they could see two pictures, they could see limit, you know, see potentials.
Yeah. It was almost like he gave you a new
he
potential.
He gave you a breath of fresh air enough to say,
like,
there's
wait a minute,
another
there's,
way.
And there's more to you and your life than this.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so today we're going to talk a lot about positive psychology and how you can get it. If you don't have it, there are many, many days when I don't have it. I don't know. Do you have days where you don't have it?
Sure.
You know, you wake up, like, sometimes when I'm really sore from working out, I'll wake up and I have this huge cloud over my head because I just, my body's sore and I'm tired.
Mm.
I can't seem to shake it, but it's like I know I'm moving towards something and I know tomorrow when I wake up, I'll feel better, you know, and if I go back and work out again, I'll feel better. You know, it's just.
That's a question. Do you have moments where you say, I need to get up now because if I don't, I won't sleep well tonight? Or if I don't get through today, I won't have a good day tomorrow.
It's, you know, it's like knowing, like, what's the outcome of my attitude right now as I, you know, and how is that attitude going to shape my future?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's a lot of thinking. You do all of that?
Not not necessarily, but I just, you know, if I were to break it down, that's how it is. Like, I've been really learning a lot about attitude and having a more positive, you know, grateful attitude about life seems to shape how each day continues, you know, each day moves. Yes, I do wake up in a funk. Like last week, I was kind of waking up in a funk, and I didn't realize until the end of the week that it was my mother's birthday. And I'm like, oh, this is like an unconscious funk.
Oh, I see.
Around grief that sort of came up. Like the whole week was just kind of funky. I'm like, what is going on? And then I, you know, saw an ad on the subway that reminded me of her. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's her birthday today. And I was like, oh, I think that's why I was just in a funk. You know,
yeah,
and it's like
a good
point. Sort of creep up on you.
Sure.
But it's like, oh.
How about you, Ben, with your friend? I mean, at that time of year, does it ignite a certain heaviness?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you might not even be aware of it. And you just say, oh, you know, that happened 10 years ago. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you know, it shows you like what the mind will do in spite of you. Your mind is doing something even in spite of you. The principles of positive psychology is we have to and we can take some control over what our mind does. So at a bare minimum, if you are clinically depressed, you put your feet on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, and I often find that changes a funk for me. Mm. You know, like the contrast between the heaviness maybe on a certain day and just 5 minutes later being on my feet and moving, the difference is like night and day. There's just the fact that I got up and am moving has totally changed my mind. So I've never been clinically depressed, but if you are depressed, the bare minimum is you put your feet on the floor. You can't work with somebody who's not going to put their feet on the floor.
No. And, well, unless you're willing to go to their home and sit with them. So sometimes, you know, people might need that. And if there is somebody who's depressed in your life, you might just go and sit and be with them and let them, you know, just keep reflecting to them what you're noticing about them. Because things are changing day to day, whether and it seems like they're not. You know, when you're in that state, you might feel like things aren't changing, but they are.
Yeah.
And your body really wants to come out of it. And something I was reading recently about that state of depression is that you're just completely overwhelmed. Your body's in some sort of shutdown.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that you can sort of normalize that and be like, what has just really got me overwhelmed or shut down? You can start to step out of it.
Mm. You know, that's a good question.
How am I so completely overwhelmed?
So we're going to take calls in about 5 minutes. I want to input these main ideas about positive psychology first. And the first one is that human beings are prone to anxiety.
Mm.
I mean, it's our species. It's our history. It's our background. So even multi-millionaires, even people who win the lottery, even people who have everything in the world, they have anxiety. And they think, oh, if I just get to such and such destination, then everything will be fine. And the truth is they're as miserable as people without any money. And often people with no money, you know, they're focused on just getting through the day. Yeah. They're not so miserable necessarily. They're taking care of their survival needs. And so their anxiety level is very, very low. So as human beings, we are an anxiety
potentially
plagued
species.
Yeah. Squirrels do not have anxiety.
Oh, yeah, they do. They got to get those nuts stored.
I don't know.
You see how much they have to like run around and how much work they have
I think
to
it's
do
just instinct.
Sure
so their, instinct
yeah,
and
not
anxiety,
really about
you know,
it.
For sure. Anyway.
Well, I think we're all descended from people and ancestors whose anxiety was a successful evolutionary tool, right?
It was, absolutely.
Because those who had no anxiety, maybe they got caught out in a snowstorm or they got eaten by a saber-toothed tiger.
Crushed
or,
by the ice in the ice age.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
We could sort of make a little definition around anxiety being anxiety that's like helpful and motivating, and then there's anxiety that's crippling.
Sure.
Sure. Sure.
So,
yeah.
And this is where, you know, that anxiety you're talking about for evolution is like a healthy anxiety, maybe even a healthy aggression, you know, whatever it is. But there's that anxiety that is completely crippling.
A panic attack typically lasts 17 minutes. It's very specific. You know, people in a panic attack think it's going to be forever.
Yeah.
And anxiety, too. You know, you think if you go through morning to night with anxiety, mm-hmm. no relief in the day from That's anxiety, not really, yeah. you have a chemical problem. You have a chemical issue. You have a problem with your biology.
And your nervous system, potentially. All kinds of things can be, you know.
Of course. But, you know, we are anxiety plagued species, but we're not chronically anxiety plagued mm-hmm. species. So you should not be having chronic anxiety. No. But just a typical panic attack lasts 17 minutes or less, mm-hmm. less, but not more than that for sure. So the first principle of positive psychology is we are descendants of this anxiety.
Mm.
And so we have, that's a reality, and everybody, you know, certain cultures are more blessed with anxiety or not having anxiety than others.
Yeah, cultural history.
And certain families are cursed with more anxieties. Yeah. So one tool would be, if I want to have a positive mind and work towards a positive life, what is the measure of anxiety in the family that I came from?
Mm.
And what is the measure of depression or the history of depression in the family that I came from and the culture that I came from?
Yeah, very good to acknowledge.
So That will help you take things in hand. You know, they did this experiment a long time ago, 40 years ago. They took some four-year-olds into a classroom, and they gave them a marshmallow.
Mm.
Right, I know this one.
Yeah.
Right, and they said,
you were free to eat it now.
You're free to have the marshmallow now, uh-huh. or if you wait 15 minutes, we'll give you a second marshmallow.
Right.
How many kids ate the marshmallow?
Most of them.
How many?
I don't know.
7 out of 10 ate the marshmallow.
Yeah.
I'll take it now.
Seven.
That's not surprising.
A bird in the hand. A marshmallow in the hand is worth a two.
Right.
Later.
Bird in the hand is two in the bush.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wondered if those kids were feeling anxiety. I mean, you know, because anxiety will make you want to find an instant remedy.
Yeah.
It will make you reach for the drink. It will make you reach for the
medication.
The gambling or the pornography or, you know, all sorts of kinds of compulsive behaviors. Because the kids are compulsive, right? This is what – and so they found that as grown adults, the kids who did not have the marshmallow, who delayed mm-hmm. having the marshmallow, had vastly more sense of well-being and happiness in life.
Yeah.
And that they did typically 250 points better on the SAT.
Wow. That's huge.
You know,
that's
so
a big difference.
So parents could teach kids what's called delayed gratification.
Mm.
And so it's leading to another principle of positive psychology, which is that we are past and present bound people driven by fears of the future. So we're past and present bound, but driven by fears of the future. And the fears of the future need to be witnessed and explicated and described so that you can pursue them without the anxiety.
Right. That's probably rooted in the past.
Which is probably rooted in the past. Right.
They were all tied up.
Right. So it has something to do with I can create a happy future if I just look at it. So we're going to be taking your calls, 212-757-5555. I do want to itemize the five major principles. Should we wait until after the break?
Yeah, well, we have a good minute. I mean, you can just rush through them real quick, and we can debrief after the break.
So positive psychology says you need to have people in your life, you know, that we are, just as much as we're anxiety-plagued people, we're also thrive better when we're with other people. We're a hive creating people. We're not, you know, the James Bond villain who's off in the sea building an underground place so that he can destroy the world. No, you know, we're hive people. We thrive with other people.
Yeah.
So positive relationships. Also positive emotions. We need to have positive experiences, a sense of satisfaction, satiation, gratitude, pride even, self-assurance, self-confidence. A sense of meaning. Like, how do you get meaning? What are you willing to struggle for?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, I don't have any meaning in my life. Well, what are you willing to struggle for? What were you willing to die for? Or
right.
what are you willing to spend years struggling for? There's your meaning right there.
Yeah.
You know, another is engagement. How engaged are you? If you're not engaged, you know, a lot of people use hobbies for their engagement.
Yeah, clubs.
Do you have something that's engaged? Yeah. And the last one is a sense of accomplishment, that yeah. you are doing something well. It doesn't have to be like I'm winning trophies, but it's a sense that I am doing something well, whether it's your job well, right. your relationship well, anything you're doing.
Baked a cake.
So it's, the acronym or the mnemonic would be PERMA, positive emotions, a sense of engagement, a sense of positive relationships, a sense yeah. of meaning, and a sense of accomplishment. PERMA, P-E-R-M-A.
You're tuned into The Positive Mind here on 99.5 FM WBAI, and we are talking about the five principles of positive psychology today. We're taking your calls at 212-757-5555. Going to take a short musical break and back after this with more on positive psychology and your phone calls. Bob Marley and the Wailers, positive vibration, as we talk about the principles of positive psychology. And Kevin, you went over them before the break, but I think it's worth just going over these five principles of positive psychology once more. The first one being relationships.
Yes, positive relationships. Imagine, like, how could you be positive if you're in a negative, draining relationship? What is a positive relationship? Let's, you know, there is science, there's data on this. Mm-hmm. And basically it's a relationship where you are getting or receiving five positive intentions or spoken words from the other to one negative.
Yeah.
Imagine.
At least
at least per day. So, you know, making tea for your partner or, you know, bringing them a towel in the shower, you know, or other things. This is positive stuff.
They're just saying you look great today.
Yes. Noticing. You see, thanks for saying that because, you know, men need to be noticed. This is part of the research, too. Women always are noticing each other. Oh, I noticed, you know, but men, you know, Ben, when was the last time you appreciated my shirt?
I always tell you how nice your shirt looks.
Well, I feel deprived. I don't feel like you say it enough, so.
Okay.
So, but there is data on this that positive comments, 5 to 1, you know, creates a positive relationship.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it's 2 to 1 or 3 to 1, you know, there's too much negativity. So positive relationships are necessary parts. So when you're coming to counseling and therapy, you know, if you're telling me that you're unhappy in your relationship and you're staying in that relationship, you know, how can you have a positive mind, you know? I mean, there are things that we have to get straight. If you want to work through this, you have to get through these. So positive relationships.
The second principle of positive psychology is positive emotions. So feeling a sense of pleasure, a sense of satisfaction, confidence, self-esteem, self-assuredness.
Well said, Brent.
Right? These are important. Let's take a quick call about someone who was able to actually said he was able to overcome negative emotions. We have Ronald on the line. Hi, Ronald.
Hi.
Hey, Ronald.
You know, in relation to what you were saying about depression, the way I remember it, I think I encountered the first time I had a breakdown in Rikers Island, and I went up to the they took me to the infirmary ward, which is you know, also cells just on one floor. And I remember when I went to see the psychiatrist, he gave me one word because I was totally wiped out. I mean, no power to change anything. That is what depression is. And you can't be just around upbeat people because you're so wiped out that it won't, you know, you'll... Anyway, the thing is that what I wanted to say is that, you know, the word karma means action, right? Supposedly, from what I understand. So, anyway, what I'm trying to say, no matter what path you may open up to me by words, that helps for sure. But the only thing that'll bring about change is you start doing the little things you need to do to live.
Beautiful.
Cook your food, buy your food, wash up, what you gotta do. In other words, anything that'll actualize your function is what'll imprint on you to overcome this negative condition of powerlessness.
Ronald, we rely on you. We rely on you to bring us these sharp insights. And thank you. So putting your feet on the floor.
It's a lifetime thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a lifetime. Right action is what he's telling us. Ronald, we have other callers.
Real life, like the way you guys said. If you're real, I think you said you're positive.
Yes.
We're talking when you actually see life real. But, you know, you can get lost and not be able to see the reality of life. We all know that. We delude. We run.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks Ronald. Thanks for sharing with us. You know, he's echoing what we're saying. You know, you have to. Karma means to do. You have good karma? Do you have good karma? Or is what you're doing bringing you good karma? You know, it's not just thinking good things, it's doing. So Ronald highlights this idea for us that to get well, you have to do. You can't just think well. You have to get doing.
Yeah, one step at a time.
So the lines are heated up, but I did want to get Ben to the other aspects. Should we take the call first?
Yeah, well, let's just talk about, we talked about the first two
positive
pillars.
Emotions, positive relationships.
Right, and number three is positive engagement. So
positive engagement.
Being involved in something that's bringing you
that
fulfillment.
Do you have something in your life that fully engrosses you, yeah. fully engages you, that I mean, you surrender your mind to,
right.
that you, as we've done shows on flow before, get mm-hmm. in the flow. Are you getting in the flow with anything? Let's take Eric. Let's hear from Eric. Hello there.
Yes. Yes, good afternoon.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
All right, great. You know, Ron, he zeroed in on something.
Thank you.
Being in progressive mode. You know, yeah. through all the different changes and the variations in life. And I was mentioning how, in many cases, what happens is, naturally, people go into their reptilian part of their brain for survival.
Yeah.
And subconsciously, this is occurring anyway, around the clock anyway. And what happens is through, you know, let's forwarding this back to some current times,
mm-hmm.
whereas the mixed messages that one may get in relationships, through social climates such as now,
mm-hmm.
the mixed messages that one may get,
mm-hmm.
it triggers that reptilian brain to get more into like a survival mode of spontaneity.
Yes,
and what happens is through the social changes, it's one of those things where the brain seems to automatically seems to go into a calcification of the spirituality and the emotions, so it won't become so attached to the direct stimuli, and therefore one can get through certain discomforts. You know, of relationships,
by activating, you know, the other parts of your brain, because the reptilian part of the brain is a reactive part, isn't it, Eric?
I would say so.
Yeah, so it's the reactive part that we share with, let's say, reptiles, or we share with animals, that, you know, we're responding to our need to go get nuts and go get our groceries. We're reacting to that impulse, and we need to go do that and get that for survival. But to transcend that, we use our prefrontal cortex in order to socially engage and in order to get a sense of things beyond mere survival. Right? We don't want to just survive; we want to thrive.
Definitely. So now, when you mentioned the term transcend,
yes.
transcending also in say like relationships or loss of a job. Or a strain of relationships and loved ones. I can see it. The same principle also occurs.
Yeah, you know,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
That's what I'm saying. What happens is once one really actually gets in tune with what's really going on within oneself, the anxiety kind of relaxes more into a mode of less panic.
Yes,
yeah.
You know. And because one knows that, well, we have endured this before, you know, we can get through this here. And now, like you said, it transcends into certain other aspects of the brain,
yeah.
where endorphins and hormones are released.
Yeah.
And person sees a successful. So what Ron was talking about, by staying in a progressive mode.
Yes,
yeah.
You know, just from the small scale
like,
of
you make
shaving,
a good point.
Shaving during the day, washing
maintaining
up,
the right
eating,
attitude,
shopping.
Yeah.
You know, they may not know how they're going to get through the month with the bills and so forth,
yeah.
but
right.
by being in this mode, every little bit helps. And I just wanted to just toss that and you know put my nickel in the Nickelodeon with that because when depression comes, in many cases, people really doesn't even know why they. Depressed
no,
in many cases.
It just comes.
And they don't even, sometimes, like you say, with people with financial scales, they don't even realize that other people see them as successful.
Mm. Right.
Because right. they, to themselves, they haven't reached that. Utopia.
Eric, I'm getting a signal that we need to move to another call, but
yes,
listen on
right,
for the show because you mentioned an important word. I just want to say before you go, this word transcend. Transcendence.
Yes.
Transcendence is one of the strengths, and then we're going to talk about strengths in positive psychology, that we emphasize strengths with people, even depressed people. You know, people who are symptomatic have strengths, individual, particular to them, specific
yeah.
strengths, and part of positive psychology is to work with these strengths.
Yes.
So we thank Eric for that. And Eric, continue to listen because we're going to talk about these traits and practices that people can use when they're not functioning well.
Yeah. Let's hit one more of the principles.
Okay, so we positive emotion, positive relationship.
Yep. Positive engagement.
Positive engagement.
You know, your involvement.
A sense of meaning.
Yes.
Now, meaning. People think, yeah. Oh, gosh, I don't have no meaning. Everybody, we're all walking around like, what's the meaning of all this?
Right.
We're all doing this, right? And we all think we're suffering on our sense of meaningless by ourselves. It's part of our species, too, to have a sense of not knowing what we're here for.
212-757-5555. We'd love to hear from some women. Apparently, this topic struck a nerve with our male callers because we've had many of them. We have James on the line. Hi, James.
Hi. How you doing?
Hey,
good.
James.
How are you?
Yeah, I was just you talking about panic attacks before?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
I come from a family of there was mother, father, and five siblings. And out of the siblings, four of us, I don't know about my sister, we all had panic attacks, and my mother, except for my father.
Except for your father. And your father doesn't have any signs of anxiety?
No, he had no symptoms whatsoever.
Mm.
Wow. So you pretty much convinced and agree with us that a lot of this can be inherited.
Oh, yeah, definitely, 1,000%, because it started with me when I was 32, and my brother started with him when he was like 30... In the 30s. Everyone was in the 30s.
And with your mom, too? Did it start in her 30s?
Mom was in the 30s, too.
Oh.
Wow. Have you ever done a family tree?
Yes. My nephew, he did a family tree from Ireland. It branched mostly all Ireland. My father had a mother. His mother was Irish, and his father was German. So we're like one-seventh German.
Oh.
But I use meditation. I tried the medication twice, and it was too nice, and I know there was something
too
wrong
fluffy,
with it,
too so fluffy for you.
Yeah, too fluffy.
Yeah, you
and
see, from one Irishman to another, yeah. You see anxiety, you know, and this is what I mean. Yes, the Ireland, the Irish culture. Lou, look at what we had to endure. Right, we had to endure dominance by the British and the English, and
definitely.
Right, so
potato
we were subject. Yeah, so it begs, you know. James, this idea that, you know, we have it in spades. Evolutionarily, we needed our vigilance. We needed our anxiety to conquer. And indeed, we've gotten rid of the British for the most part. But they're still there.
I think the offset of the panic attack was from any time I was rushing. You know, when I was pushing, I was working, and I was trying to get more done, and that's when it kicked in.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just complete overwhelm. Like, your system's like,
so
I
that's
can't
why
do
meditation.
Anymore.
Got rid of it, Yuri.
Yes, so medication works with panic attacks. It certainly does.
Yeah.
But you should do a mood family tree.
Mm.
Notice.
I'm gonna try that. Yeah.
Yeah. If your mom's mom, forget your dad since he doesn't suffer from
mom. That. Yeah.
But you, as a family, you should work on this together to try and find out where are the roots. I bet it goes back.
You see, we're all sensitive. I do qigong and all that stuff.
That's
a huge
help.
We're so qigong. Sensitive. Everybody in the family is sensitive. We pick up energy. We pick up. Poison ivy, I pick it up. It's just sensitive.
Right, right. Well, we're a highly attuned species, we Irish.
It's a whole different
very
thing.
Sensitive.
You know?
Very sensitive.
James, thanks for calling. Listen to the rest of the shows.
Day.
We're going to be doing a bunch of shows here on positive psychology, so listen up.
Thank you. Have a good day, everybody.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
And let's just round out our discussion because we address the five sort of pillars or concepts of positive psychology, starting with relationships, positive relationships, positive emotions, right? A feeling of pleasure or satisfaction, self-confidence, positive engagement, meaning some kind of involvement, whether it's work, a satisfying career, volunteering, a hobby, a sense of play.
Yep.
Number four, a sense of meaning.
Right.
Yeah.
What am I here for?
And, like, what am I willing to die
what
for?
What am I willing to struggle for?
Struggle
right.
for
There's your meaning.
For.
You know, if you're in med school
There's
and you're
meaning.
Wondering, you know, if you're in med school, you don't have time to ask what my meaning is, right?
Yeah.
My meaning is I want to help people.
And finally, number
and the
five
last one
is a sense of accomplishment or achievement.
You know, and that can even be applied to what Ronald and Eric were saying. I shaved today. That's an accomplishment.
Thank you, yes.
Like, wow. Yes. I put my feet on the floor. That's an accomplishment.
Exactly.
So those little steps can be seen as accomplished as finishing law school.
Yes, and you know, as a therapist, I often tell people that's an accomplishment. You did this.
Yeah.
You did something a little different. You know, and that's progress. So I thank you for highlighting. That's a really important thing. We have another Eric on the line. Mm. Where are the women today?
Hey,
Eric.
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Excellent. So, you know, I turned on the show this morning. My father was listening to the show this afternoon. And once you started putting out the idea of positive changes and positive mind itself, the title of this, I mean, it just struck a chord with me. One thing, the reason is, I've been practicing meditation since 1988, since I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And my whole
life. Since you were 8 years old?
Yes.
Wow.
So from then on, even up to this point, my whole entire engagement with my mind, with, you know, this concept of the self-view and all of that was about stripping it down. Why do I react to certain things the way I do? Who told me it's supposed to be that way?
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that I'm doing these things this way? Like, basically, who held up the sign that says when someone criticizes you, I should be upset, angry, and try to complain to somebody else instead of realizing, is it true? Like, ask that question. Is
Thank
this really
you.
True about me?
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And then if it's not true, then leave it alone. Like, why get upset about something that has no relevance to your life?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then
what do you believe
in? If it is, right, exactly. And what if it is true, how do I change that way?
Mm.
You know, always about developing this concept of, and then we'll use the self-view. So the view of the self, just as a tool, you know, there's a lot of people attached to this, and by the time they're 35, 40, they go through this midlife crisis, if that's their midlife for them, and then they have this total breakdown, and they go into deep depression, and so what is my life for, which is basically what you're saying, well, you know, what's the reason for living, why am I doing this, why am I living, what am I accomplishing for, you know, and they can't find a fit, they can't find that piece of the puzzle that says, yes, you are relevant in this whole entire scheme of the world, because they're told. And you understand, it's like, I'm not going to put out that people are told this one story and put the idea of conspiracy. I'm just going to put it this way. Whatever we are born into in our family, that's the first world we got.
Yeah.
Right? Our parents' feelings, their views, the things they don't say, but their actions, that influences how we see our world.
Yeah.
And that, in turn, shapes our view. So when something doesn't connect with us, we feel out of place, we'll associate that to, I don't know what I can do anymore. I'm useless. What am I going to do with myself?
Mm-hmm.
And it really comes from my experience with this, from coaching and even myself hitting depression many times. I had a psychologist say, you know, I come into your school, into your center, and I see you sweeping all the time. You're cleaning and making everything nice and neat. I said, yeah. She says, are you okay? And I start laughing. And I said, I'm fine. She goes, why are you doing it all the time? I was like, because I'm the only one managing my business. I'm the only one cool. My center, none of my students are doing it. I don't want to make them do it.
Yeah.
And she starts laughing. Yeah, she says, it's a sign of depression. I mean, really badly. I'm a psychotherapist. And look, you're losing weight. You're this and that. I said, look, I am going through some stuff.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I can do things.
Yeah.
Yes.
In my world, I can be active. Why am I going to let just a few people who are trying to destroy things really ruin my whole next maybe 70 years of my life?
Yeah.
I mean, really, it doesn't make sense.
Eric, who got you into meditating at 8 years old?
Well, I have two major influences for that. My father, who's still around, and he's a big influence now, but when I was young, he was like this example of Taoist philosophy in the modern time, you know?
Okay.
And he led by example, like, you know, the cause and effects of things that you mentioned, karma before, the activity, the doing, what you get from it, what you influence to it. And then my sister, my second sister,
ABC.
Who influenced me with meditation.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So when she introduced me to meditation, it was more of a, here's a stick, and if you go off your path and focus, I'm going to knock you in the head, that kind of meditation. You know, it's kind of like, here's reality, not what you think, not what I think. That's not reality. You know,
well,
reality
I,
is,
I really appreciate
things happen,
what
you know?
You said earlier about thinking about what it means when someone says something that upsets you or that bothers you. I think that's very powerful stuff. And also, I think something that's often overlooked is, this person said something that bothers me or upset me. How much of that is really a reflection on me, and how much is a reflection on who they are and what they're about?
Right.
And I think it's so easy to overlook that, but when we try to take that perspective, it's a lot harder to let someone rock your boat or upset you.
Yeah.
You know?
When we are focused on expecting how this person should be with us and how we should have things, you know, experiences, situations, not material things. I'm talking about experiences, emotional, mental experiences. When our expectations aren't met, most of the time we, or, you know, whoever is in the situation, gets so much more upset that they didn't get what they wanted.
Yeah.
Being an experience, that becomes the pivotal point of, I'm going to fall into this hatred state of myself and this poisonous
Do you, as a therapist, do you use that tool? I often do with clients, like, what did you expect? What was the expectation? Because often the unreal expectation is the one that's setting them into the spiral. So if you can look at, oh, all this time I've been expecting something that I really shouldn't have expected in the first place, and that's what's causing my misery.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, right.
Eric, we got to thank you for the last call for the day.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
Keep calling us. Thanks for the call.
Peace.
Peace to you, too. Yeah, 8 years old.
Wow.
To learn.
That's a history.
To learn how to meditate. I don't know.
That's great.
Peace and relaxation is definitely one of the things. But again, so these five things, we're going to take this up tomorrow because tomorrow we want to focus on strengths. What are your strengths? Often people don't know their own strengths. You got to get it from other people. Like if I asked you, do I have any strengths, you would say them, but I wouldn't know them.
Right.
And I could look at Ben and say, well,
unaware,
you know,
of our strengths, our resources.
Yeah, there are plenty of strengths in Ben's, but, you know, my own. You know what I'm talking about?
Like
it's often best to be told what our strengths are. So for tonight, for callers for tomorrow, we're looking for strengths because part of positive psychology is, you know, not pie in the sky. It's just to focus on what you have.
And pragmatically recognizing what we're good at.
And sometimes
pragmatically and using it and working with
it. And sometimes our greatest strengths come from our hardest times.
We'll be
yes indeed.
Back to
that's a good point too.
Back right here, same time, same place tomorrow to continue this discussion. Thanks to everyone who called and tuned in. And please consider becoming a BAI buddy. Go to give2wbai.org or wbai.org. Help us reduce the frequency and the duration of future fund drives. Please become a WBAI buddy today.
How much is it a month?
I think it's $10 a month.
$10 a month. It will cut down on our fund driving.
Oh, please.
So please, three calls today for WBAI fund drive.
Be a really positive action to take.
Absolutely.
For buddies.
Thanks again,
and
we'll see you tomorrow at 1 right here on 99.5 FM WBAI. Take care.